Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Sydney Hems Debrief podcast, episode 14. My name's Dr. Samuel Bulford, one of the registrars here at Sydney Hems, and I'm absolutely delighted to be talking to you again in 2024 with episode 14. Joining us on this episode is Dr. Jess Devlin. Jess is going to talk about one of the cases from her career, which stands out, and some really key learning points from that. So I'm absolutely delighted to introduce Dr. Jess Devlin. Jess, thank you so much for being here with us. Hope you're having a good day so far.
Cool. Thanks for inviting me. It's great to be here.
Perhaps we could start off, as we've done with the previous Best Case Ever kind of series, by hearing a little bit about your professional self and how you've come to be in this position.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a staff specialist with the ambulance service, and I'm also a state retrieval consultant in the Air and Medical Control Centre. I've been working in pre-hospital and retrieval medicine with New South Wales Ambulance since around 2018. My other profession is that I'm an anaesthetist. I work at Wollongong Hospital, where I'm quite fortunate to have quite a diverse and interesting mix of work that I get to do there. And I'm also one of the supervisors of training for our anaesthetic registrars. I guess something else I think is interesting about me: before I did medicine, my background was in psychology and mediation, or alternative dispute resolution. So I really like to reflect on non-technical skills and human interactions in my practice, and I'll do this a bit with this case as well.
Well, that sounds like an incredibly valuable background to have in what is now a wonderfully diverse pre-hospital and in-hospital career. So we're super excited to hear about your case.
Thanks. All right. So my case, I was on a helicopter day shift. This was several years ago, and I was still a registrar at the time. We were tasked to a water primary. There were reports of multiple people that were in the sea. We had set up for a water rescue mission. We were aware that there were other helicopters also tasked due to multiple patients in the sea, and we responded quite quickly, but we were initially not aware that the patients were actually out of the water, as can, of course, happen in a fast-moving situation. With a number of surf lifesavers on duty, but also a really large number of community bystanders, and many happened to be New South Wales Ambulance paramedics and a number of local doctors and nurses. The lifesavers all had their gear on the beach. They're able to bring everyone in really quickly. There were multiple patients who had drowned and in cardiac arrest. The lifesavers and the off-duty bystanders separated the patients and organised into groups, and obviously New South Wales paramedics arrived quickly and integrated into these groups. As we were overhead, we confirmed that everyone was out of the water. We landed and we joined the scene. We received a handover from the local inspector. We made a plan to separate briefly the paramedic I was working with and I to review the patients. And there were several, as we've said. There was, just to give a few examples, there was one in cardiac arrest with ALS being delivered by a paramedic team. There was another that had return of circulation after an arrest. They were agitated, but they were reasonably stable and being managed by a team of paramedics and bystanders. There was another that had return of circulation, but was GCS3, ventilating with an LMA. And this is the one that we decided to attend to, with the plan that the next arriving medical team could assist. The main challenges for us with our patient were airway management, circulation, as he was requiring a bit of adrenaline post-arrest, and logistics around getting him safely off the beach. The team with him had done an amazing job in stabilizing him, but his ventilation was difficult with the LMA, so we decided he would need to be intubated to safely extricate him off the beach. And this was obviously a bit challenging. It was difficult to position him as we usually would, as he was on the beach, but we did try to prepare well for this difficulty. And there was a large volume of fluid and edema coming from his airway during laryngoscopy, which required copious suction. But he was intubated without issue. Unsurprisingly, he was a bit difficult to ventilate post-intubation due to secretions, but he improved eventually with mechanical ventilation and PEEP. His hemodynamic stabilized also. The paramedic I was working with made a plan with the lifesaver crew to get him off the beach using a mix of our equipment and their equipment, which was quite complex. In the end, the patients all made a full recovery in hospital. And I think this is a great case in part because of the excellent outcome. All received really prompt and necessary critical care pre and in hospital. And it highlights, I think, how fortunate we are to have such a well-developed system where all of these steps can come together, and often so seamlessly. The other thing I really like about this case is the amazing community response, the rapid rescue and the ongoing help from volunteer lifesavers, all the off-duty health workers that rallied around the patients, not only provide the initial care they needed, but also did so in such an effective way. And obviously it was the quick rescue and the early BLS that made the biggest contribution to their outcome.
This is a fascinating case. Some huge images of the scene come to mind. And I wonder if we could just kind of dissect a little bit, if that's okay, because, you know, water primaries, for those listening, are jobs where there is an individual in the water potentially who is struggling and who needs rescue. And Jess, when you receive a phone call to a water primary, what's the kind of things that usually go through your head, and how quickly did that change in this particular case, given the extent of the number of patients involved, and what did you do with that information?
Yep. So I think that this was one of the most challenging parts of this case for me, is that we'd initially been going to what we believed was a water primary. And we did believe there'd be multiple patients, but our understanding was that there'd be multiple assets going. And as you've asked, like when we set up for a water primary, what we're expecting to do is set up our cabin for the paramedic to prepare to winch down and pull the patient out of the water, bring them up into the helicopter, and then we're going to land and we're going to manage that patient that we've rescued. So what we're expecting to be doing is manage an individual patient and obviously manage the arrest if they've arrested post-drowning and provide the critical care that they need. As we approached and we started to see sort of groups and the scene on the beach, we're able to confirm reasonably quickly that the patients were out of the water. But then what we did become aware of was that there were multiple patients that now required management, and we were the first medical team on scene. So this then changes our focus from being a single patient water primary to being a multiple casualty event, where we potentially have multiple patients that will require medical team interventions, and we need to apply some of our multiple casualty principles around scene assessment, triaging, before we even start to manage the patient.
And just pausing there, that was very fortuitously my next question, which is, you know, it's not uncommon for a pre-hospital provider, be it a HEMS team or otherwise, to go to multiple casualty scenes. And I wonder if you could speak a little bit about how one triages and assesses that scene before committing resources to particular patients. Because you mentioned something quite interesting, in so much as you and your paramedic colleague separated in that process.
Yeah, that's right. So in this event, as you said, the initial priority is to understand the situation, the number of patients, and I guess all of this to feed into feedback to the larger organization about what resources are required. And we obviously, as the medical team on scene, were a scarce resource at that point in time. There was only one of us. So we get taught to apply a protocol for mass casualty management. And so the acronym that I've learned around this to guide my management is the CSCAT one. So that is going to be for command and control. So we get to a scene like this, we establish that there are command and control structures in place. In this case, there was an inspector on scene. And then we're also the aeromedical asset on scene, and we would communicate with the aeromedical control center. So we make sure those processes are established. So S is for scene safety. We confirm that we are safe on the scene and that everyone is safe on the scene and what is needed to make that scene safe. The next C is for communication. And obviously communication is really essential in events like this, because we need to start to organize our response. We need to make sure we have not only enough healthcare providers, but the other emergency services that we need to be able to manage the scene. And that might be in terms of getting control of the scene, bystanders, access, things like that. And then we actually start to get to assessing patients. So there's a few things there before we even start to consider the situation. Assessment is an assessment of the scene, an assessment, and we're going to move into triage from there. So we're assessing the scene, looking at what's happened, what is the likely, I guess, injuries or pathology that's going to be affecting these patients, and how many patients do we have? And then we need to triage our patients. And this can be quite challenging, obviously, because we often want to get in and start managing. But the best good that we can do initially in a multiple casualty event is actually to move around the scene, get an understanding of everybody that potentially needs care, and then try to develop some sort of order, obviously, in which they receive care. And so that can be very difficult, because it can be hard not to get drawn into managing these patients if you have an intervention to provide. But as you said, we initially split up and we did a quick move around of the scene with a view to come back together and communicate about the patients that we had to then make a plan about where our efforts were best directed. The T is then we start to treat the patients. In this case, we identified there was one patient that would, in the most immediate sense, benefit from a medical team being involved. And we directed to them, but with a plan for treatment for all the others. So all of the others are being managed by qualified teams, and there were more medical teams coming. And then last is transport, which we obviously contribute.
And the logistics side of this scene, you know, we're kind of front and center by the sound of it, of you and your paramedic teammates' mind, even in that overhead kind of moment.
Yeah.
How did you find the working through of the logistics, both during your triage and treatment and then in the transport phase as well?
Yeah, well, I think this case, in terms of the integration of the clinical issues and the logistical issues, really highlights the work that the critical care paramedics do, because I see them as sort of being at an interface of both issues. Because we identified a patient that needed clinical management, and that was advanced clinical management that needed to be intubated to safely move them off the beach. But there was also some challenges in terms of how we were going to get them from this place to the helicopter. We often find as a service, it is helpful to break up a big problem into more manageable parts. And part of that is considering clinical and logistical issues separately. But of course, there is an interaction between the two. The clinical status of the patient affects the logistics. And then obviously the logistical considerations can affect what we can offer a patient. And that's obviously where the CCPs sit. They sort of understand both sides of things. I was able to focus largely on the clinical management of the patient and communicate with the CCP about the patient's status and what they needed. They were engaged in that management, but also did a fantastic job of engaging with all of these people around us to work out the best way to get this person off the beach. And that involved using other emergency services in their area of expertise. We were really lucky to have all of these lifesavers around that were very, very keen to help. And so we were able to engage with them and tell them what our problem was, what we needed to achieve, and they were able to help with some suggestions on how to do that. So I guess the way our teams are structured is we have a person that is considering all of those things together. Obviously, as the doctor, I'm aware of those, but I get to focus on the management of the patient while they are supporting on the periphery, sorting out some of those things. And I think that's a good approach in these big, overwhelming sorts of scenes where it can seem like so much that you have to do. That I think the best way to approach it is to start to identify priorities and break things down, break a big problem down into manageable parts, if that makes sense.
It sure does. And, you know, you're absolutely using the skills of those around you. And, you know, a similar situation which comes to my mind is when there's a chaotic full resuscitation of a hospital, and you as the senior doctor are standing next to the nurse in charge, who has that kind of mindset about the broader logistical picture as well. And I wonder whether or not we could focus on that word of integration, because it sounded like a very synergistic integration process between you and these multiple other agencies. But in your experience of kind of integrating with teams, what are the kind of pearls and pitfalls that we could all be looking out for?
Yeah, of course. Obviously, we spend a lot of time our service integrating into existing teams. We often come to scenes after management has started, and a lot of our management is integrating with New South Wales paramedics who work in a similar system to us, and we share protocols and share a language. And so often I think we draw upon that to integrate into these groups. What can be more challenging is to integrate into large bystander teams where we've got a group of people, some with quite extensive experience and really valuable skills to offer in this situation. And they've been managing the patients, so they've had hands-on and they've been directly involved. But then obviously it's as we come in and our role is to provide critical care to that patient in the field, but also start a process to get them towards hospital. It can be, I think, difficult for some of those bystander groups that might not have familiarity with our role, what we do, with our gear, with the environment that we work in, with the pre-hospital environment being so unique. So I think it can be challenging in that regard, integrating into some of those groups. This one, we're really fortunate. This was very, very seamless. Everybody there was genuinely keen to help. We happened to have a number of bystanders that knew us personally, but also knew about our service. And so they understood the role that we were providing and that we were going to be taking over the critical care management of that patient. But sometimes it doesn't go that way. And I guess in my experience, some of the things that I think about when I'm integrating into a group like this is obviously it's always essential that we acknowledge the contribution of the people that are there. Because they really have gone above and beyond to in their they're out not on duty, not on shift. They've stopped to help somebody and provide their expertise and their skills in that situation. And so that's a really big thing to do to start with. And I think we need to acknowledge that in those people that they've stepped up to do something difficult and stressful. And I often find acknowledging that contribution and keeping people involved if they want to, because they've been invested in it, if appropriately, can be really valuable. So I acknowledge their contribution. If there's something that they can do, then I would certainly like to keep them involved, and particularly if there's something that I need them to do, because sometimes we do need multiple hands. At times when we sort of need to, I guess, for the purpose of momentum or being able to provide our care, we need to start to de-escalate the scene. So we might feel we have too many people involved, too many people around the patient. We also need to have some strategies, I think, to gently take over the care of these patients, to focus on the patient at that point. And I guess that is how I frame these things. If I think there might be conflict or a disagreement around that, and this goes back to conflict management principles, I try to shift the focus from individual interests and positions to a common interest, which is the patient in this case. The best thing for this patient is that we can start to get them ready to go to hospital, to where they need to be. And these are the things that we need to do. We need to be able to take some control of this situation or start to do our work the way we need to do it to get this patient towards hospital. So I try to focus on the interests of the patient around the care that they need and the momentum towards hospital, whilst acknowledging the contribution of those people that they've done so much to help us, manage the patient up until this point. Thank them, and that we'll take over from here so we can get them to hospital. Does that answer your question?
It certainly does, and it really speaks to certainly the background you mentioned of mediation and conflict management. And I'm just, the learning that you described just there can obviously be taken into any field when there are team members which you need to keep involved or which you need to start to take more a leadership role within, for sure. I wonder if we could just touch on psychological safety of a big scene like this. Again, there'll be many people listening to this podcast who may not be directly involved with this line of work, there are certainly many who are, but who nevertheless will come into contact with large scale scenes with multiple patients, which can be quite psychologically troubling, both in the immediate and the longer term as well. And particularly noting your psychology background, I wonder if we could reflect on how one can start the healing process, or at least maintain that psychological safety, should this kind of thing happen again in future.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a really important consideration in scenes like this, because I think it can potentially be more distressing and traumatizing to encounter these things when you're not in the day-to-day course of your role. Although you might see things in your workplace in the hospital, there's something different in terms of processing, I think, when you haven't gone to work expecting to see something like this. Big events like this, I think if we are exposed to something potentially distressing, then obviously the initial thing to do is to have an opportunity to process it in some way. So I'm a big believer, like a lot of people in our organization, in a hot debrief after a big event. And that is the purpose of that, as many people know, is provide some opportunity for emotional processing. So opportunity for people to come together and say how they feel about something without necessarily being therapy, but also an opportunity to share information, because often a lot of the stress and distress that can come from after these events is about not knowing the reasoning for things that happened, not knowing the outcomes, wondering about your own management, wondering if you did the right thing. So bringing people together to have an opportunity to explore that and be all on the same page is immensely valuable. How we provide that to bystanders is quite difficult. In this case, we had some engagement, the ambulance service and also Era Medical. We did seek to engage with a number of people, the surf lifesavers and some of the bystanders that had been involved in providing care, to check in and offer opportunities to participate in debriefing. I think most large organizations will offer their staff that opportunity to do so, to have some initial discussion. From there, I think it's about we need to recognize that potential exists. And as when we can engage with bystanders, I guess try to give them, I guess, give the advice that it's very possible that you will have things that you need to process, and that needs to be acknowledged firstly. So if they are feeling like they're struggling with the event, most important thing is to acknowledge that and seek some help. And that might be to have a discussion with someone that you trust, or to engage with an employee assistance program. And so I have had discussions with health workers that have been involved in providing immediate care in some of these events in the past, as a check-in afterwards to see if they're okay. And part of it, I think, is making sure they're aware of some of the resources that are available. So New South Wales Health has access to the Employee Assistance Program, and it's actually quite excellent in terms of providing health for staff. So we can certainly refer them to things like that.
And I guess just another plug for an organisation to have something like a significant events registry, which is what we're very fortunate to have here in Sydney, which is a process whereby a potentially distressing event can be logged, and specific individuals within the organization who have had specific training on counseling someone after such an event can just confidentially make contact with individuals to check in with them. Do you think that's, I think, a very valuable kind of process as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we've been able to integrate some of those into, we've got something similar in our hospital at Wollongong, actually, like in our anaesthetics department. So I think there is definitely space for those sorts of processes too, like in the hospital setting.
Well, look, Dr. Jess Devlin, we're coming towards the end of the episode, and what started off as an example from your own practice, we've been able to talk more broadly about, you know, large scale casualty events, and some really valuable learning there around the integration within the team, the logistical considerations, as well as how you actually approach these events to begin with the CSCAT mnemonic, before we've touched on some psychological safety aspects post-event. Are there any further reflections or comments you'd like to make on what's been a really fantastic episode?
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I think the thing I would just say, one of the things that struck me about that job and that I still think about is that it was obviously such a big and busy scene and initially a bit overwhelming. And so I guess if you talked about this podcast being listened to by people potentially new to our environment or interested in our environment. And I guess some of the big learning points for me was that the cognitive load associated with a big scene like that in the pre-hospital environment is very real when it's something that is new to you. And so I think it's important, and it's something I've developed to have strategies for myself in how I would manage a big and overwhelming scene, and also how I manage a situation that has changed rapidly, which we also talked a bit about. I think those are important development points for me, is reflecting on how I engage with those situations and what I can do, I guess, to navigate them as best as I can in the future.
Are you happy to share some of those strategies? Because I imagine they'd be very valuable to our listeners.
Yeah, sure. So I guess in terms of coming into an overwhelming scene, the things for me is that I acknowledge it to myself, of course, and potentially to my team as well. I think there is no shame in coming into something that is potentially big and challenging and difficult, and having an acknowledgement in the group that this is a difficult environment. So we're all aware of each other. I have processes to, help myself stay calm. I like to use breathing exercises, but different people have different things that they do to center themselves. I always try to break a problem down into manageable parts, like I've talked about a few times. And again, I think that's a bit of a mediation thing, thinking about it explicitly that way, but mediation is all about taking a big and messy problem and breaking it up into manageable pieces. And so for me, an overwhelming scene, I want to try to make it manageable for myself. The first step is information, is to really focus on a handover and get the information that I need, because then I can work out priorities and then I can break it up into manageable parts. And then, yes, work with the rest of your team to break up the problem and delegate things in a way that means that everybody is sharing the load and that things seem more attainable, is probably my big bit of advice. And I could go into more detail about that, but in the interest of time, I won't. But we have talked about a few of those things, I guess, in terms of breaking things up into clinical and logistical issues, or, breaking up a mass casualty event into working parties, like we do automatically as part of our protocols. And then in terms of strategies around having to change, like getting new information or your situation changing and having to respond quickly, again, I think the most important thing is information, is getting the information that we need to create a new plan, to reframe and refocus. We talk a lot about pause points in our service, and this is obviously one of those really important situations where you would have a pause point. There's been a big change in circumstances, I'll ask for a pause point to get everyone on the same page, and I'll generally say something like, "The situation is different to what we expected. I'd just like to make sure we all have the same info and are still happy with our priorities and our plan." And I guess how I sort of run that sort of pause point would be about, I think about the structure that I use for pre-briefing before big cases, and I sort of take principles from that, I guess, during the management of a big case or when things change to refocus the team. And the things I particularly think we need to consider are what we know, what do we expect to happen from here based on this, or our plan A, what else might happen or what might change, or what's our plan B. We need to revisit roles if the plan has changed. And then I ask, have I missed anything? Or ask for suggestions from the team. So I guess I try to have little structures like that that I can use to engage my team in difficult situations that I can just fall back on without having to think too consciously about them. Does that answer your
Absolutely.
question?
Yes, that's absolutely fascinating. And I love how you acknowledge that this is overwhelming. This is there's a lot going on. And kind of please help me, have I missed anything, to make sure that everyone has that voice and feels able to speak up.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I've done that with teams, and I do it often, I've really gotten a lot of gold from the rest of the team when people feel empowered or invited to contribute.
Yeah, fantastic. Look, Dr. Jess Devlin, thank you so very much for for sharing that, and thank you for a wonderful episode. It's an absolute delight, and maybe we can talk again in future about more of these strategies using your psychology and mediation background, which you describe. Absolutely fascinating. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much, Sam. Thanks for having me.
It's been a pleasure. And again, if there's any feedback, then please contact me, Samuel Bulford, just via the Sydney Hems website or via my email. It's been a complete pleasure talking to you, and speak to you again soon. Have a great day. Bye-bye.